And we will take up action item number 901, CMATS and Cobalt Science and Social Studies High School Cut Score. Commissioner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a carryover from yesterday. If you ask me to tell the agenda, I'll turn that over to Ms. Zerkowski.
Madam
Chair.
Yesterday we presented to you some alternative options in terms of cut scores. There was some conversation amongst the board members in terms of concerns, and the request was that we would come back today and you would have the opportunity to have discussion. I think there was at least three different issues that we've tried to address in some way, shape, or form. The first is the issue of really needing to have this be a standards-based system versus providing the normative information, and we did try on individual student reports to provide both. So those people who want to be sure to be able to make reference to the standards, they can do that. They will have that reference point. For folks who want to be able to compare their child's performance to the school or the district, they will have those reference points as well. There was conversation about whether or not results should be released for just students or whether results should be released for all. I think that's open for discussion amongst the board members. And then there was also some questions about how the assessments could be, the assessment results could be used. And we did want to emphasize that in House Bill 1323, these results cannot be used for educator effectiveness or for accreditation purposes.
Any comments, Steve?
Thank you. I think let me start by making a motion so we get something in front of us. And it'll be what you have in front of you, a motion two minus the word social studies, which would not be included in the motion that I make. And I'll be happy to read it.
So you're just talking science?
At the moment, yes. Yeah. So I move to adopt fully adjusted high school cut scores and their associated performance level descriptors for the Colorado Measures of Academic Success and the originally proposed alternative assessment cut scores and their associated performance level descriptors to be used for the purpose of producing individual student reports. These reports will also include descriptive statistics for comparative information. Consistent with House Bill 1523, these results will not be used in educator evaluation ratings or for producing accreditation ratings. Cut scores will go through a validation process and be approved by the board before being used again. And if I may speak to the motion, I think probably the single best comment I heard at the legislature last session was that these tests have become a way for adults to settle scores among themselves and really are not designed, unfortunately, for the benefit of children. And I think that's really what we've seen happen, that the purpose of these tests now is to hold adults accountable. It really has little to do, and that's why I think you see the problem with kids opting out. Nonetheless, having said that, I am persuaded by the argument that those who took the test have a right to know what the results of that test happens to be. I do not believe that these results should be for any other purpose, and I think along with this motion, in terms of just dictum that goes with it, would be that the staff will not calculate district comparisons, school comparisons. Those will not be calculated for obvious reasons. That only individual scores will be sent to their respective schools. I view this as a compromise approach. And let me just say one thing, that I don't agree with the Attorney General on this matter, that we are under any obligation to produce cut scores. If by some reason there's a citizen out there that thinks we are and we don't, their proper course of action is to sue us, and let's find out. The role of the Attorney General is to defend us in that case. So I'm not making this motion because I think we're subject to any litigation or penalties for not releasing these scores, but I do think that this is one of the things that we should do for the people we're supposed to be serving, which are the students, and as opposed to trying to settle scores among adults and hold adults accountable. So I'll move motion two with, I think, the understanding of what goes with it in terms of what's calculated, what records are available and exist. I view it as a compromise, as unaccustomed as I am to that. I view it as a compromise position that will allow at least us to move the science scores forward.
Is there a second?
No.
Can you second it first? Oh. Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to see if I could amend the motion, or if you want to discuss it
not
first.
Not seconded yet.
Well, does it have to be seconded before it's amended? Carrie? Do you have to have a second before you can have
it? Okay. Somebody have a second?
I seconded.
All right. Seconded by Val.
Okay. My question is, Mr. Durham, would you entertain an adjustment as requested instead of releasing all the scores pell-mell? Typically,
please.
The scores aren't available until fall anyway, so they're really not holding anybody up as far as how to adjust instruction per se. Students aren't using the data for any particular purpose, as far as I can tell. Those that took it and want information, can they request it and receive it as opposed to releasing all the data?
Mr. Crosby, it's my understanding that the data would have been released if it was done back in March. Is that not correct? Or when would the data be gone to the schools?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The data has not gone to the schools and the districts yet. We had hoped to be able to release it after the March board meeting, but it hasn't been released yet.
So my question is, can we release scores as requested? As opposed to pell-mell. Can we release scores as requested by students? As opposed to releasing all the scores.
You mean they have to ask for them?
Correct. Would give us a good sense of how students are perceiving the importance of the test.
I'm not disagreeing, but it sounds rather overwhelming if each student has to ask for their test.
I think a website could be set up. It could be accomplished.
Jane?
Yeah. Well, along with that, I guess I want to know, what does it involve? If this says students only?
These are high school students, right?
Yeah. There's no access unless we amend it to talk about upon
Jane
request.
Speak up a bit.
You know,
I want to be sure what we're talking about.
We need to have this looked at, I'm thinking, whatever, when we have time. This is students only. So in other words, classroom teachers will have no access to this information.
Schools will?
No. But doesn't say that.
It's just
I guess I want to know, you know, if we're going to talk about this, where is it going to serve a purpose? It's actually
good. Madam Chair, and I'm sure I will be corrected if I'm not getting this quite right. I believe that the intent was to release the individual student reports. And typically there is a set that goes to the students, and then there is a set that goes to the school as well.
But this doesn't say that. I'm at least I don't see it.
Steve,
in here.
Can you clarify?
Well, I think that I certainly don't have any objection to it going to the schools in an uncompilated format. That is, there's no summary information, nobody's done any calculations for districts or individual schools. So I don't have a problem with that, and I think that's the way I intended it, but if we want to nitpick it, I'll be happy to withdraw the amendment and go on.
Well, okay. All right, I'm totally confused. Deb made an amendment Are you agreeing to the amendment? I'm now totally lost. I heard your motion, and then Deb dramatically changed it.
Well, he's saying that we can release the data and the cut scores
for kids,
for science. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, can we make it as requested? Because it would give us a good sense of how the public is viewing the test if they request the data.
But then the next question had to do with, does it go to the school and the teachers or only to the students?
Somebody explain to me why we cannot set cut scores and release them, which is our responsibility. I have never given a test that I refused to give the results to the kids to.
Because look at the cut scores.
Because adults give terrible meaning to them.
These standards, these standards were developed before we had 191, before we had the accountability rule, and they were not intended as any kind of punishment to any adults.
Madam Chair?
That's nonsense. That's not what the intent was.
When we have a test that's as faulty as this, with all the glitches, with so many people not taking it.
Quickly.
I'm sorry, this is as fast as I can speak. So when we have a test that is really not valid with everything that is
happening. I mean, at this point, we are not prepared to say it's not valid. It may be, it may not. Let's just get to the point of whether we release the scores or not.
I don't think we're going to get any meaning from...
And that's fine. That's fine. I'm just saying we don't need to get into that.
To meaningless.
Okay. Steve, did you intend all of this? I understand what Angelica's saying, but I think we're trying to reach a compromise here that because we were not happy yesterday, any of us, that this, you know, all of this work was not going to be released at all. So I appreciate the fact that you are working to make some adjustment there. And I don't think we should spend a huge amount of time talking about it. In general, Steve's motion, can we pass that in general? Maybe there may be an amendment or two, but we can sit here for an hour and argue about the parents or not the parents or whether it's a good test or a bad test or any of that. I think we've been there, done that. We all have our own opinions about the test, but I believe that you're working to find a way to release this so we're not just not saying, no, you can't have your test scores. Am I right?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's correct. And I just simply would say that, I mean, I've made the case a number of times. There's no reason to make it again. I believe these cut scores are entirely too subjective. That's my opinion. And I believe that there could be motives behind these cut scores that I don't like, and I don't want to go back and revisit that.
And I got that. And basically, I agree with this. I mean, I'm not happy with it. I would much prefer a different way. But in order for the scores to be released, I would vote for your motion. Yeah. That's what I think. Are we going to release them or are we not going to release them? Is the big question.
Madam
Chair.
I think that's the question.
I think Steve is right, and maybe what Deb is saying is that, well, I would say that would be maybe a different question that you're
different
asking.
Different motion, perhaps?
A different motion.
You could make that motion separately.
Yeah.
Could you do that,
and
Deb?
I think that's the way it's.
And it would be a different thing, but I think that we could send the scores to the parents, I'm sorry, to the students and the school.
And that's what we're doing here.
That's what we're talking about.
That's the topic.
And just leave it at that.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, but I'm surprised. Yeah. Is that, would that be all right if we wrote on the motion and then you could make a separate motion?
And may I make a comment?
Sure.
My issue with the test, if people take a test, obviously it's great to get feedback to folks on the test. My issue with it is, today, when we approve those cut scores, we are approving the performance level descriptors, and we are not uncoupling them. The nature of the items on the test are driven by those performance level descriptors. The language in those descriptors is quite interesting when you think that this strong or distinguished command is supposed to fit students for success in subsequent subject matter. They claim to to be linked to subject matter knowledge and analytic skills. If you look at those bullets, I would question that it's fitting students for success in the next level at all. I ask to find all the subject matter knowledge for scope and sequence in science and social studies based on these descriptors. I don't believe it's comprehensive at all. And so I just object to that the performance level descriptors and the way that they have been used to drive the cut scores. So we're going to be giving students assessment data that's going to give them the impression that they're distinguished, strong, moderate, or limited, and that it's going to give them the impression that they're ready for the next iteration of subject matter knowledge in science and social studies. I think it's specious information.
Would you prefer that we not pass, that this motion not pass? I'm asking in advance.
I won't be able to vote for Mr. Durham's motion as it stands, but I appreciate that he's trying to create the conditions for...
And I'm trying to get the
for compromise. I appreciate
that.
I wish...
We're not going to solve all these problems today.
May I ask a question about the motion? Is it your understanding that, Steve, that further validation... The wording, the cut scores will go through a validation process. Would that validation process include a revisiting of the performance level descriptors?
Madam Chair, I believe the answer to that question is yes, because I'm certainly not inclined to vote for another set of tests that are, or another set of cut scores that use this same validation process.
I have a question.
I would call the question. I think we could sit here and argue about it forever.
You what?
But I just wanted to ask a question.
But you... go ahead.
Well, my question is, I was thinking that we would just give raw scores and not give those descriptors.
Not necessarily.
You know, the motion does reference those descriptors, because I don't think they can be effectively released, if I understand the way they've been done, without those descriptors. So I think we're stuck with that as regardless of our opinions as to how accurate those might be.
And that's kind of what I'm saying. Let's call the question. I'm not real happy with it, but I'll vote for it because I think we need to get it off the plate.
Yeah.
And we could sit here and argue for an hour and have the same result we had yesterday, which I was very distressed with. So, unless anybody has a problem.
Well, I'll just make one.
You have to call the roll, right?
Yeah. What? Yeah. I just
call
make
the question.
One. Call can I make one last comment closing? I appreciate Dr. Schroeder's motion to, or proposed amendment. I'm sorry. Dr. Shuffle, don't mind me. I think it probably clouds the issue further, and I'd rather not have it as a part. So, I'll just leave it.
Okay.
May I ask a question?
Would you call the roll, please?
And just to clarify, this is for Steve's motion that Val seconded.
I can't hear you.
And just to clarify, this is for Steve's motion that
Val
seconded.
Yes.
Great.
Claire.
Steve Durham.
Aye.
Dr. Flores.
Aye.
Jane Goff.
Aye.
Pam Masnack.
Aye.
Marcia Neal.
Aye.
Dr. Shuffle.
No.
Dr. Schroeder.
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you. Motion carried.
Madam Chair.
Where'd it go?
Izzy, would you please repeat what you said right before that vote? This is just to clarify what...
I just wanted to make sure that we were voting on the motion that Steve had originally made, which is
this
here
one.
Excluding the social studies, and that Val had seconded.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the end part.
Does that conclude this part of it?
No. Madam Chair,
yes.
Just... The exclusion of social studies, is there, we would just need some guidance on what you would like us to do with social studies.
Do anything with social studies?
I'll make a motion.
Correct.
That we adopt the fully adjusted high school social studies cut scores and their associated performance level descriptors for the Colorado measures of academic success and the originally proposed Colorado alternate assessment cut scores and their associated performance level descriptors to be used for the purpose of producing individual student reports
These reports will also be include descriptive statistics for comparative information. Consistent with House Bill 151323, these results will not be used in educator evaluation ratings or for producing accreditation ratings. The cut scores will go through a validation process and be approved by the board before being used again.
Is there a second? Jane? Any discussion?
Yes.
Well, just I will. I think I'll be a no vote because I think the problems with the questions and the descriptors in this subject matter are greater than those with science. So I think I will be a no vote on this.
I would add a reason to support it. Of course, you all know me. Is because it's social studies and it's been proven that we're so bad in social studies. I'd like to know. I'd like to know what these scores are. And if we don't release them, then we don't know. So I probably would be a yes vote for that reason. I understand the concerns, Jane.
My reason for thinking we probably ought to be consistent and include social studies on its own right is because it is still alive and well in our system discussion. So
it's alive. I'm not sure how well it is.
Point taken. But the mention of it, the passage of the bill that created a different tack on it, be it by timeline, if nothing else, it's still part of our whole picture conversation, and as I would think that all of the assessments themselves, I mean, we do have a review cycle, we do have a rotation of input, and we talk about an expected process, different kind of validation. I just think it's okay. I think it's appropriate. I think it's fair to that right now where we are to leave it in the mix and make sure that we're looking at both things not the same but in consideration of the fact that they're all still part of our work.
Any other comment, Deb?
I wanted to just respond to your comment, Madam Chair. I would agree with you fully. We desperately need good history and social studies content to be taught in our schools and to ensure that kids are learning this content, but I would look at the performance level descriptors as suggesting that this will not prepare students with the subject matter knowledge and analytic skills to allow them to succeed at subsequent grade levels. The language in those performance level descriptors is a problem, has been a problem from the beginning, and I feel that consequently the items that have developed against them has been a rather manipulative process, and I think that's unfortunate because we had a great opportunity to develop an awesome test in social studies and history, and we didn't do it. So now we're going to be giving, again, information to students that is implying one set of skills and not really delivering on the promise to the kids in Colorado. So I'm sorry about the way that this test was developed, but I agree with you. The need is great.
Okay, can we call the question? Would you call roll, please?
Steve Durham?
No.
Dr. Flores?
No.
Jane Goff?
Yes.
Pam Masnack?
No.
Marcia Neal?
Yes.
Dr. Scheffel?
No.
Dr. Schroeder?
Yes.
Okay. That concludes this part of the agenda. I've got so many papers by this time. Thank you, Joyce. And we will move on to the graduation requirements. Scheduled for 12 to 1:30, so I hope we can get through this quickly. I really need to be out of here by 4 o'clock, so I'm really pushing your people. Commissioner?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. We're bringing this item back before you today. We talked about this at our last meeting. and we told you we would bring this back for further discussions along with the table that's as a part of your material. So I've got Rebecca Holmes and Elliot Ash to make a substitution.
Okay.
Rebecca, if you want to start.
Sure. All right, thank you. And I promise the double notebook does not mean double the content. You'll remember that we shared with you at length in February the work that had gone on since the May 2013 State Board adoption of the preliminary graduation guidelines document. At that time, you all directed us to take on a process, and we shared that process at length with you in February to get much broader public input into the graduation guidelines menu. In March, we came back and again shared with you both the 2013 adopted menu and what was at that time a draft from the assessment work group, the final of seven work groups. And it was their draft and our staff draft related to where they were sort of moving since May of 2013. We wanted you all to see that before you were asked to make any formal vote. Then in March, we also involved Tony Dill and the Attorney General's office in what you all requested was an opinion about the minimums that were required in terms of action on the graduation requirements, graduation guidelines. And so that's all been presented to you. We are back at this point with a final staff recommendation. Elliot will walk you through how it is slightly different, but not significantly different than what you all last saw in March. And so we just wanted to give a little bit of a reminder of process, but then spend the bulk of our conversation today on that proposed menu and allowing you all to have the robust conversation that you asked for in the last meeting. You'll see our agenda here today. Like I said, we just wanted to sort of take us back a few months, revisit our statutory guidance. We do want to have one conversation with you all to determine messaging based on some feedback we've gotten from the field in the last 60 days, and then spend the bulk of our time talking about the new staff recommended menu. So you can see here, just again as a reminder, the statutory guidance that Tony shared with us in the March meeting of this year that walks through what the minimum requirements are for the graduation requirements. You can see here that they reference the fact that they need to be comprehensive, focus on core competencies, that the evaluation that was done there did give permission that you all could set guidelines or requirements that only address two and not all four core subject areas. And you'll remember that we had a panel in February and you heard from several educators as to their rationale for why they thought two versus four subject areas was the way to go. Remembering that this menu that you all are adopting is not student-facing. And so any district that wanted to add additional content areas, whether that be science or PE or arts, would certainly still be able to do that. You'll see the reference here that the menu does have to be aligned with the post-secondary academic admissions standards established by the Commission on Higher Ed. And so that is the few cut scores that we've discussed in the past that are at this point non-negotiable because they've been established by CCHE. And you'll see that the menu also asks or guides you all and guides us to think about multiple and diverse pathways. And so one of the issues that we've highlighted for you is the new staff recommended menu that's finally coming to you all for a vote today has about almost double the number of options for districts that the 2013 menu did as well. So those are for your consideration today. We want to pause before getting into the meat of this and just talk a little bit about language. At some point this afternoon, it would be helpful for us as staff if you all would make a formal decision around graduation guidelines or graduation requirements. You'll recall that Tony walked us through the statute. It is a troubling statute in terms of how it's written. They are guidelines that districts must meet or exceed. Therefore, believe me, we've had years worth of conversations with districts where they said, well, ultimately, this is a requirement because we have to meet or exceed it. However, what had happened in the interceding 2 or 3 years is that counselors and directors of high schools, directors of post-secondary readiness in districts, had interpreted the menu in the following way. They had interpreted the menu, and I think we had encouraged this, that the menu were guidelines from you all to their district. And what the district then needed to do was choose from the menu to set requirements. That made sense to them in terms of what their task is, in terms of how they have to operationalize this in the field. They have to then lead a community process to determine from all the pieces on the menu, what do they want in their local diploma policy.
You all made an informal request of us to change the language in the February meeting to call them graduation guidelines, or I'm sorry, to call them graduation requirements. I think there was sort of a let's call a spade conversation. We were then confronted with several questions from the field where people thought that what you all had meant was that now everything on the menu was a requirement for a district to include. So we got phone calls from districts saying, oh my God, I've never offered IB. Now you're calling these requirements. I am a district and I'm required to stand up a robust IB program. I've never offered industry certificates. This means I have only 2 years to put together an industry certificate program. And so we are, if it is your decision and your purview to call them requirements, we will manage that misinterpretation and confusion in the field. But it was a bit surprising to us, and so I just want to flag for you that for several years, the way this has been interpreted is that you all are adopting a policy that is district-facing, that gives districts a menu that they choose from in deciding what's required for their students in their diploma policy. So we don't have to get into that now. If you'd prefer to table it for larger discussion this afternoon, that's fine. But in whatever you all determine and vote on related to this policy, some specifics around that language would be helpful to our team. With that, I'll come back to this timeline. We did want to remind you that this is policy that goes into place for the graduating class of 2021. Seems a long way off, but that's this fall's seventh graders. So just helpful, I think, to ground yourselves in that. When you heard from our panel of educators, they talked about their appreciation for the fact that the State Board in May of 2013 understood that this was a long runway, that you don't want to change the graduation requirements on a student who's already in 10th or 11th or 12th grade. And so the long runway that you all adopted in May of 2013 was certainly appreciated. We're at a point now, though, that if a district needs to have a six-month or year-long community process in determining their diploma requirements, they really want to get started on that now so that those can then be communicated to families when this group of kids are in eighth grade, and so that families understand it's not a moving target in their district about how they're going to get a diploma in 2021. So with that, I'm going to turn things over to Elliot to walk through a bit about the old menu and the new menu that you all have in front of you. And I'll highlight, Dr. Sheffield, particularly for you, you raised some very good points in our February and March conversations about the language around the menu. And so if you look at the final document that you have, there are a number of very specific points made in that menu. For example, one of them is that our recommendation today is that in addition to this policy, an assessment work group would be reconvened every 18 months. Because what we know is that between now, when these students are entering seventh grade, and when they graduate, our assessment conversation as a state is going to evolve very significantly. You'll see, for example, the menu still includes PARC. Last week's legislation pulls that back to ninth grade, and so there's still some nuance to figure out here. And so what I think I would represent from the districts who've participated in this to you all is that they would like to see something adopted so that they have enough guidance to move forward. But they understand that if we were to lock a set of assessments in place today and not revisit that for the next 5 years, it would be quite the opposite of a living document that they could put in place in their schools. So with that, Elliot, thank you.
Good afternoon. Oops. Is this on for you?
Yeah.
Okay. Basically, let me just point out a few key features from the original menu that is currently in force, I might say. Basically, it required competency demonstrations of post-secondary and workforce readiness in four subject areas, English, math, science, and social studies. And also, the available pathways was somewhat limited, some because they were to be determined, like capstone or industry certificate and so forth. As we reconvened the group that you asked us to do and added some more voices to the conversation, a couple of big issues came up just to remind you of those. One of those is, do I have to show, do students need to show post-secondary readiness in all four of these subject areas to be prepared to go on to higher ed or to some career training? Do they also, are we talking about post-secondary and workforce readiness, or are we talking about success? And that was a major issue for the group. So with those two in mind, if we go to the recommended menu, and I apologize, it's a little hard to see, but I believe you have this in front of you, there's a couple of key differences that came through. But before I do this, I want to reemphasize something that Rebecca brought up earlier, and that's that This menu is a staff recommendation. While most of the elements have been are accepted by the folks on the assessment work group, this isn't. I'm not moving this forward as their endorsed version. We took their recommendations and came to as much consensus as we could, and then we made a couple of key decisions, which I'll point out in just a moment. Also, before I review the menu, I also need to let you know that there was some feedback from the group that we wanted to make sure that folks understood. While there was basic agreement around the elements of the menu, there's not basic agreement around some of the policy itself. There are some folks that felt this was an overreach into local control of school board setting graduation requirements, and there were also some folks who said that there weren't enough pathways here for rural folks, given particularly their available resources. Now, we had some other people say this was useful to them and it helped them in their work with their communities, which were also rural, but I want to make sure you heard those two points because they were expressed in the group. So two major differences here in this menu from the original one. First of all, we narrowed the focus of the competency demonstrations to English and math. That came out of some discussion within the group and with particularly with a number of higher ed folks about the requirements of this law were to reflect the requirements of the Colorado Commission on Higher Education, which only outline requirements to get into credit-bearing classes in those two areas. A second piece is, and it was a large debate, and I say debate in the best way, the folks that came to this group were very committed and very professional, but also shared what they were thinking, and we had a chance to discuss these thoroughly. And that was the difference between being ready and demonstrating success already. So, for example, on an advanced placement exam, to get earned credit at least at some universities, you'd have to have at least a 3. In some cases, it's 4 or 5. So if a student earned a 3 on that exam, they would have been demonstrating already, at least according to folks in the group, that they are...
That's a 3.
I'm sorry.
Can I interrupt or should we wait? Just while you're talking about that. I just wondered if there is the concept of creating numbers as cut scores. I mean, not cut scores. Numbers, though, as thresholds, right? I was just looking at the guidelines, and I'd have to pull the exact language from the statute, but it says... Minimum standards, be aligned with, use the recommendations of, be aligned with, and so forth. Never does it say you must set a number as a minimum threshold of acceptability. Where was the critical mass of people calling for those numbers? Because I think, you know, we've just heard from rural superintendents saying, give us flexibility. Now we're ready to dive into yet another pool with numbers that are fixed at thresholds. And I truthfully would have to look at each one of those numeric thresholds to look at what percent of individuals scores at that threshold to be able to comment on how strict this menu of items is. And I'm just wondering what was the appetite for those threshold numeric entities as opposed to aligned with standards-based and so forth.
Madam Chair? The pieces came some from the Colorado Commission on Higher Ed. The way the group interpreted the alignment or aligned with was that they should at least reflect what the cut scores were that they set for getting into credit-bearing courses in Colorado community colleges and four-year universities. So that's where the ACT and the SAT were there, and they've been on the menu for quite some time. The advanced placement and the international baccalaureate pieces came from folks in the group saying, a student who takes an advanced placement course and at least scores at that level on an exam would demonstrate their ability to move into a course and be successful. That's where those pieces came.
So am I right that a number of the rural districts did not like this approach?
Madam Chair? A number of the rural districts didn't feel good about the available pathways here, so some would say, I need more options, and that the group tried to create those as best they could. So... pieces like the collaborative, the standards-based performance assessment pieces, as well as trying to get at concurrent enrollment, were reflections of trying to create more pathways for different kinds of students through the menu.
Thank you.
Okay.
So we Madam Chair, we already moved on with the, and I think I appreciate the question, the advanced placement piece. The group came to a conclusion that we would lower the score to a 2 so that students who at least attempted the exam and scored at a reasonable level could use that as a way to demonstrate their college and career readiness. The piece that was also, you see that reflected in the International Baccalaureate score of 4. That's the concordance of with advanced placement of 2. We also lowered the cut score for the ASVAB assessment after a lot of feedback from people in the group and some discussions with the folks who administer that assessment about what the meaning of that score was and what it allowed students to do. We had additional discussion about concurrent enrollment, and it originally had removed that from the menu and brought it back on as a result of feedback from folks across the state, so that students who took a remedial course and were able to pass that basically had demonstrated they could go on to credit-bearing courses. That was reflective now in a number of folks from our Colorado Commission on Higher Ed as well as from our community college system itself. And then we also added a long-winded title to assessments that we hoped might even be able to be a an integration of the kind of accountability discussion you heard this morning with these requirements, so that if districts could come together or within districts develop some assessments that would demonstrate competency in English and mathematics or an ability to go on to post-secondary and workforce endeavors, that may also be some assessments they could use in an accountability system if we can move this pilot language forward to allow some of those pieces. So at this point, we have received feedback and continue to get it. We made sure you've got a recent letter from Brett Miles, who's the superintendent at Holyoke, commenting on the pieces. And I think Brett does a nice summary of giving you the concerns of rural districts as well as their opinions of where the menu has gone. Generally, we see folks saying that it's improved, it's more feasible for us, but we still have some issues. Others are using the menu in hopes that it'll be approved as they're starting to have discussions with their colleagues across their districts. With that, I'll turn it back over to Deborah. Deborah, excuse me. You're Deborah. Rebecca. Sorry. Been a long day.
So with that, really, we're just open for discussion from you all. This is the landing point at this point in terms of a staff recommendation of a menu that we would put forward to districts. I think Elliot has walked you through the variety of assessments on here and where their cut scores were chosen. I'll just put one slightly finer point on the question that Dr. Scheffel asked. It is in statute that the guidelines must be aligned with CCHE policy. CCHE policy has set those firm cut scores on the ACT and SAT, so those numbers have remained unchanged since your adoption in 2013. And then the policy says that every pathway, while not identical, needs to be equally rigorous. You can imagine the rather insurmountable task of trying to set every pathway as then equal to the ACT and SAT scores. There simply aren't concordance tables for all of those things. We've had really robust and fascinating conversations, for example, with the military about the ASVAB. And is there really a score that is completely aligned to an 18 or a 19? They have now pulled their concordance table and said there is not. But what the menu is that's in front of you as a staff recommendation for a vote today is as close as our many work groups and experts can get to meeting that statutory requirement that each pathway here that a district could choose from in crafting their diploma policy is equally rigorous. So with that, we're open for questions.
So I didn't get to read this in advance, but I remain confused what the concerns are of the rural districts. Clearly, we're not saying that all these conditions need to be met, but are they saying that none of these work for them? And if so, what is their wish in terms of setting grades? I mean, because it's their job to set the requirements at their districts. But I'm awfully confused what it is that they want to see.
I'll defer to Elliot, but Madam Chair,
I think one of the primary concerns we've heard is about cost and equity. That if you are a small district, having a robust IB program, for example, is much more challenging.
But they don't have to.
Exactly. And so we've tried to work with them, and you'll see some references. For example, the addition of work keys was very satisfying to them. The addition of ASVAB at a lower level was very satisfying to them. Industry certificates, the collaboratively built assessments, and then a capstone option, I think, are things that feel like they would get at that equity piece. Ultimately, there is also the issue of cost, that many of these items to stand up do have some kind of cost to a high school to carry forward. But Elliot, you've worked more closely with them. I don't know if there's anything you would want to add.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just echo what Rebecca said about this. Basically, what they'd see is the menu's kind of reduced for them. They don't have as many of these options available as a larger district would have. So they may not be able to have an AP program unless it's distance learning. They may not have an IB program. So the attempt was to create some additional pathways. But that would be, I think that would be the reflection of some of the rural folks in the room.
So what we've added is still not enough for them?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would say for some.
And are they suggesting some other add-ons? I mean, I'm just confused because it's up to the school district itself to pick. There's not a requirement that you have five of these or whatever. What is the expectation based on these guidelines? That a board chooses one or two, right?
One or as many or all as they would like to have in their diploma policy, and then they can be additive, not in terms of adding options, but in terms of adding additional subject areas. So sort of adding out to the right, but not in terms of adding down.
They can't add anything at the bottom on their own?
No, so that would be adding an additional pathway. You could add something. In that case, you would add, 4 years of coursework in English, and that would be a way to keep the historical seat time-based requirements.
And that's not allowed.
That has not been interpreted as allowed based on our statutory review.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
So am I right in assuming that the district capstone, the industry certificate, and the collaboratively developed standards-based performance assessment are all to be approved by CDE if they're to be used? Is that right?
Madam Chair, based on your feedback specifically, we changed that language. You'll see in the menu, it's very specific that the district capstone, as an example, says district approved. We are providing best practices about how one might do that, but we would not be approving the content or the outcomes of a capstone, as an example.
So what is the involvement of CDE in those three assessments?
In district, Madam Chair?
Yes.
In district capstone, we're simply putting out some a collection of best practices from districts that already have strong capstones. In industry certificates, you see language that does suggest CDE guidance, only because you, as a district, would need to adopt an industry certificate that is recognized in the state of Colorado by a community college or a technical program. And on collaboratively developed standards-based assessments, that's really a placeholder, depending on what comes out of the legislation that was passed last week.
And then do we need to have PARC in here? Why do we have PARC as an option? Do we have to have it?
Madam Chair?
Let the board decides.
The only rationale for having PARC there is that it was part of the 2013 menu that you all adopted. No district raised the removal of PARC. Like I've said, I think in a few months it would be worth reconsidering if PARC only exists in the ninth grade. Using it as a diploma cutoff is a bit challenging. But for now, we didn't have any district raise a rationale for removing it, in part because I think people were waiting to see what happened in the legislative session. The other rationale for including PARC is that the statute does speak to the options being aligned with our standards. And so that is the option that is most strongly aligned with our standards, unless you were to develop a capstone or a performance-based assessment that was deeply aligned.
And then you may have presented this earlier, I don't know, but like when we look at a 62 on ACCUPLACER or a 31 on ASVAB, can you create a relationship in terms of a percentile rank? In other words, what is that? I'd have to go look up each one of those assessments and say, gee, a 31 on the ASVAB is in the 50th percentile, or it's one standard deviation below the mean, or what is it? I don't know the meaning of these numbers without looking them up.
Madam Chair? The 31 actually refers to a percentile rank on the ASVAB.
So it is the 31st percentile or better?
That's correct.
Okay, and is that what the field asked to be shifted so that it doesn't reflect just an officer training threshold score? Is that?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, and how about the others?
Madam Chair, the others were a reflection of, and I don't know the percentile rank on those, I can get those to you, but they were a reflection of common practice in community college system, and so we adjusted the AccuPlacer, for example, on the basis of recommendations from Commission on Higher Ed and our community college and four-year college members of the task force, and we did adjust those because they were higher than they were before, and as we talked through it through the group, the standard AccuPlacer varies a bit from how they use AccuPlacer to put students in particular courses at various institutions, and these are a little bit lower than the standard piece because of current practice.
So I would just ask, before I would be able to vote on this, I'd need to know what each of those numbers represented, like a 4 on IB out of Advanced Placement 2 out of ACT Compass 79, 63, are those percentile ranks? What is the standard error? What's the standard deviation? I mean, so that the numbers mean something, and maybe all of you know that already. I don't, but I appreciate it.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
In the International Baccalaureate, is there a number 5 and a 6? Or... I'm just looking down at the international.
I'm sure I didn't quite hear the.
Is there a ranking of a 5 and a 6?
4.
And a 7.
IB. For IB.
IB, yes.
Mm-hmm. 5 and 6.
Seven.
Oh, up till yeah. 7.
And they're labeled with various pieces. These two are the AP and the IB come from a concordance table that shows the relationship between those two scores.
A what table?
Concordance table that tries to get you, you know, if you know that you have to be an 18, what's comparable in terms of an AP and what's comparable in terms of an IB score?
Well, sticking with the AP, I don't know why. I will tell you I was a little dismayed to see it go from 3 to 2. I think that's a false, I don't know what, it's a false message. High schools, and I believe most kids who are, especially those involved in AP currently, are well aware that a 3 is pretty much the minimum, the minimum where there can't even be conversation opened up about admission, depending on schools, placement in certain courses, the level of placement for higher ed. Financial aid, I mean, all kinds of things. I was disappointed in that, and I don't know. I don't really need to hear what the group's rationale and push for that was. As far as IB is concerned, same thing. I am not familiar with the scoring, the category, the ranges, and the rationale for IB tests, but I do know that lowering that, I don't know. I'm just concerned about what message that sends to communities who whose kids start to take part in this with certain expectations. The other thing that I'm struck by, I'm going to have to process this a little bit today. Why it actually says at least one of the following. So we have two columns. Two major content areas here, and the guideline is one of quite a variety of options here, each of which has its own unique purpose, message, future ramifications, predictability, whatever. I'm concerned that it's one. I don't know that a child... if we're telling districts that you've earned your diploma, earned your diploma from a standardized test score, which we all have our, I think we have a pretty much joint opinion about all of that, versus versus enrollment, having taken part in a concurrent enrollment. I'm probably not making any sense here. I'm just thinking that to limit this to one, at least one, will districts tend to, I'm trying not to project on them, but will they tend to go to the bare minimum rather than stretch, encourage, search out, seek out ways in their own community where they could have district capstones and involve people in their communities in creating the projects for kids to show that they're ready to move ahead? I'll stop there because then I'm going to get repetitive.
Madam Chair?
One seems crazy to me. It seems very, very limiting, very low expectations.
Madam Chair, I'll just offer one response. I think it's helpful to remember that many of you have been deeply involved with district boards, and that where we've seen districts move ahead with this already in the intervening 2 years, they've had those conversations really robustly in their local communities. And for the most part, the sample policies that we're beginning to see from districts who did not wait for a next round of menu to move forward is just that. And that in many cases, they've done one of two things. They've either said, we feel like it should be more robust, and so we really do want some kind of performance of learning. If you have a 19 in math, we still want you to prove that you can carry out a science experiment over the course of many weeks, for example. We also, and the language above the menu is clear on this, gave districts guidance that they could also change the cut scores up as represented their local community. And so we've worked with some districts who've asked for support where they said, we really need to drive more of our students to take AP. So for us, having our AP cutoff score for a diploma at 2 makes perfect sense. Meanwhile, other districts who've said exactly what you said, no way. We want the cut score that if you can't get a 3 on the AP, we haven't done our job as your high school. We're going to keep you. We won't offer you a diploma. So I think it is helpful only to remember that what you all are being asked to adopt then goes through a round that is guided by a local district board in terms of the options that make the most sense for their community.
I think that's a good point. They can reach higher. We'd be very happy if they reach higher. Anybody else?
I appreciate that answer. I'm also reflecting a little bit about yesteryears when courses like IB and AP had weighted grades within the system, and that was an encouragement. And I think that's the job of the district, to make the decision about encouraging kids. I'm not sure that our communities would actually accept for the state to set aspirational goals. I think that's the job of the community. Mm-hmm. There are states that do have a state graduation definition. And everybody's got a, pardon me?
49 of them.
Okay. And we struggle with that. But I think at this point, even though I've initially had the same reaction that you had, Jane, that, oh my gosh, here we are lowering it, I think what we're doing is actually transferring the responsibility to set high standards to the communities themselves.
That's a good thing. Right.
I think that's a good thing, having served on a board. I think that's where you have the really, I believe, the really, really hard conversation with families about college readiness versus career readiness. And we've not had that conversation here, but there are so many folks who see that as being very, very different. What we heard in 2008 through 2010 when we were setting the standards, what we heard is that that's not really different, but that conversation needs to go on within the communities so that parents understand, parents who believe their kids are not going to go on to college, but they are going to seek directly careers, have that understanding and have that conversation and set those expectations of what they have to be. If we do that here, it will not have meaning out there in the communities. I understand some of the pushback from the rural communities, but it is my guess that when they start having those conversations, every one of those parents actually 99.9% of those parents, I know it's not everyone, have high expectations for their kids and high hopes for their kids. And when they see that to be a farmer, to have any
job even within their own communities, that they are going to need some skills that are greater than when those folks first started out, that we're going to get there. So I have struggled with this too, Jane, but I really worry about us being aspirational rather than transferring that responsibility to the folks who we in this state actually believe have that responsibility.
Madam Chair?
Did you have a response to that?
No, Madam Chair.
Yes, Bill.
I just wanted to say that I don't think that rural districts would have lower expectations.
Not
than
either.
Any. I mean, I think that communities want to have the best possible education that they can provide for their for their community. And I think that one of the issues, I mean, the big issue that I heard rural districts say was the monies. Where are the monies going to come from to provide equity, to provide, you know, this quality that they want to provide? I don't think any of them, from the people I've spoken with, have said we just want to go to the bare minimum. I don't think that's the case. And I think, too, that we have to think that, indeed, different communities provide or are different, and that even with all our imagination, we really can't think of what they're going to be coming up with, and they just want the right to be creative and to provide the best for their community.
Any other comments? Jane?
Yeah, I it's important. I apologize if my statements came out as being, I don't know, sounding like, you know, overtaking the, putting any kind of an evaluative statement on what this group has come up with. I've always been interested in what's the background of the conversations. How do people get to the point where they are? It just surprised me. It was maybe a momentary thing, but when I saw that the just taking AP as the example, when the score expectation had been lowered, curious as to how did that come about to be presented as a consensus opinion. It's interesting. Same with all the other ideas, you know, and that because of and recognizing the fact that every district of any size has its own unique unique view and unique interests and unique challenges and obstacles. We all have a resource challenge, no doubt about that. But if we limit our conversations and our thinking, our consideration of what's policy, to concepts and just this context, there are so many opportunities and talents and possibilities in districts of any size to effectuate any one of these things. I'm just curious as to how does a district get to a point where they make a decision if they're going to take just one, no prejudgment on how aspirational they're going to be and how motivating they're going to be in their district. I don't know, just curious as to how people get to that point where they can do it.
Pam?
Well, we have Paula here from the Rural Alliance. Maybe she could explain a little bit about the issue with rural districts. Can you? Would it be all right if she just commented on the rural? Would it be Paula is here from the Rural Alliance. Maybe she could explain the issues for the rural districts.
Sure. It's okay with me. We give you permission, Paula.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members, and Ms. Masnick for allowing me to speak. I have to admit I walked in sort of midway through this conversation, so I might have missed some of your comments. With regard to the concerns that the rural districts have, though, around these graduation guidelines, they've been the same concerns we've been raising for 11 years now. And quite honestly, Dr. Flores, are very much what you enunciated. It's resource issues. We're looking at these things and saying our rural schools can't even offer most of these pieces of the revised menu. It's not that we don't set high expectations. Our communities are more involved in our schools than many other places. We know exactly what our kids want to do, you know, where their interests are, how to help guide them there. We use the ICAP process to have those kinds of conversations. We've had to cut programs that are incredibly important to our kids to make up for unfunded mandates in other areas. So our ability to respond to our children's needs has gotten more limited over the last 8 years because of the way the state has decided to address education. And this is one more limitation being put on our rural schools and our rural children. Our parents, like any parents anywhere, have high expectations for their children. But they also realize they may want to be a farmer. Brett Miles, superintendent in Holyoke, his son just graduated. He's going to go to school at the community, or the, it's not the community college, sorry, the college in Fort Morgan, because he wants to take over his grandfather's farm. And that's great, and they've been helping him get there. You know, so we're looking at alternative schools that some kids want to go and open their own salon, different things like that. It's that breadth that we're trying to provide for our kids, and what we feel like is our ability to provide those opportunities that are student-specific, no matter what they are. Some of our kids are better scholars, go into military academies, but it's limited when you put this type of menu up. It's great to set high expectations and say, as a state, here's where we'd like to go, but we're still asking to have the ability for local control to maximize the use of our resources to do what's best for our kids, to help increase their learning, and to make them successful. I have no idea, as I said, what was said prior to when I walked in, but this is my third go-around on this. I've been involved in these discussions since 2008. I was part of Governor Ritter's Graduation Guidelines Development Council. I was part of the last go-round with CDE several years ago, and I served on two of the subcommittees for this work, the last one being this assessment group. This was not consensus at all. And in fact, our rural schools were amazingly vocal that this will not work. Again, not because we don't have high expectations for our kids, because we don't have the resource ability to provide a lot of these things. We'd love to. Maybe the state will get there someday.
Could you give me a couple of examples of things you would be able to do?
Can you, no, first of all, can you provide one? Is one? Can your district sure. not provide one of those?
One, but it's to tell a kid that if for some reason, oh, let's say you... what am I looking at?
Paul, the discussion is that it's a menu. And that as long as you pick one and possibly add some of your own from your district, I mean, that's what we're trying to get to. Right. Obviously, even some big districts are not going to offer all of those, and that is never the intent. A menu is about, I'm going to have maybe only an appetizer today, and that's all. I'm going to have one item off of a menu. And I think what we need to hear from the is there not one of these that can be chosen by a district?
Paul.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Schroeder. Yes, I would say every district can probably offer one. But is it fair to, for a rural student to have the weight of their high school graduation be based on one item from this menu? Because that's all they might be able to offer. Again, we're looking at a body of evidence for our kids. And I haven't talked to every single district, but I know these sentiments came out loud and clear in our discussions, and they have for the last 11 years. I get that it's a menu, but again, this is a local control state where our parents, our students, our communities, our boards are incredibly engaged. We're doing community engagement processes around setting local graduation requirements. We believe we're providing great opportunities. Our kids have amazing high school graduation rates. They're going on to college and post-secondary workforce opportunities.
So Paul, what we're saying limiting. That if you pick one of these and add whatever you as your boards add, that's what we expect. I think we're trying not to say it's got to be all of these or it's got to be three of these, but it's got to at least be one. And then it is up to your community to actually set the requirements for your kids. Am I wrong? Is that not the conversation you all have been having?
I don't know if I should answer first or
you want to respond
Ms. Shuffle
directly
wants to say
that.
Something.
Yeah, I was just going to respond. What I'm hearing is that it's a double-edged sword to say it's a menu. You only have to choose one, because then if you only have the resources to choose one, that cut score stands. And you can add whatever you want to it. This isn't a suggestion. That's a requirement. and districts can only add to it. So once they land on one, the menu is then shut down. Now, if they're in a district where you can offer five options, then I guess they could score one, if they could hit one of the thresholds on Compass or AccuPlace or whatever, they have more options. But these districts are going to have to choose one because of the expense.
At least so essentially, at least one. So a student in a district that has
one gate board, you're creating one gate. That's the problem.
And so may I ask a question here of Rebecca? Yeah. Have you had this conversation, Rebecca?
Madam Chair, yes.
many times.
For 2 years. Yes, it's very familiar.
What sort of recommendations does your group have?
I would say that the other side of this conversation, and by offering this point of view, I'm by no means personally or citing Elliot with this, is the voice that says that if 50%, what we know is 50% of our kids are not hitting an 18 or a 19 on the ACT, which means that by that standard, 50% of the kids in our state are not college ready. We have over a 33% remediation rate. And that is not all rural, that is urban, that's rural, that's across the board. And so I think that the other side of this conversation for the same 11 years has been, is there a way that at the state level we could set a floor that wouldn't inhibit the creativity of local districts, but that would start to find a cohesive and comprehensive way at getting at what has been interpreted in the data is students that aren't ready for the day after high school. That said, like I said, I just wanted to point out there are two sides of this conversation. That said, I think we have worked, and I'll have Elliot speak because he's done the bulk of this. We've worked with those rural districts, and we've really focused on how do we take the work of the districts that have moved very quickly forward. And those are places, those are not all urban places. For the most part, they are places like Archuleta, La Vida, very small, who have said, this actually enables us to do some work we're pretty excited to do, and they've now given us best practices that we're looking at sharing statewide this summer, where they've created robust capstone projects, where students actually are demonstrating something that's far more meaningful about their career readiness than an 18 or a 19 on the ACT. And so I think we've tried to find that sort of middle ground landing point between two polarizing sides of that conversation and do that by putting out the work of districts who've moved forward fairly quickly.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'll do is just echo what Rebecca said, but add a couple of pieces, and that's, and I think I made these statements before Paula entered the room. We described that there was, that when you look at this menu, the objection is not to what's on here. I mean, there were some arguments about a 2 or a 3 and those kinds of things that you already described. The objection more was whether or not there were enough pathways through for rural districts to do, and there were objections about whether or not this was overreach, as I said earlier in my opening remarks. So one of the values of the group is to add as many different pathways as they could. These are the ones that we could come up with within our group that seemed like reasonable responses. We also tried to take a reasoned approach to the requirement that there be 4 different kinds of demonstrations across each subject area and reduce that as well. So there are folks on either side of this argument, but I certainly don't mean to discount at all what Paula brought to the table, and I was hoping that we had expressed that earlier in our presentation.
Okay, I think we need to move on here. We're repeating each other now. Paula, thank you for your...
Thank you for letting me call this, Paula.
I don't know where we'll land, but I certainly understand what you're saying, and I get a little confused. Not confused, but I think we're trying to meet, very sincerely trying to meet everybody's expectations, so thank you.
Thank you.
Deb,
I appreciate
you have
that.
Val?
Deb, I know we give, or the state gives $600,000 for startups for charter schools. Is it possible to provide the $600,000 and give them to these school districts so that they can have more options? I'm asking this of Tony.
I suspect not.
What about a magnet school?
Well, I think the problem there, assuming you're talking about the federal funds that are given, you know, that are granted out to charter schools, that's really a dedicated pot of money that has to be used for that purpose.
And this this is far outside this. This was not included in the discussion, and it shouldn't be. Deb, did you have something more to say?
And if it's a magnet school.
Deb?
Like a charter school.
No, Val, not here. Later. Take it up. Bring it up separately.
I was just going to say, I think the goal of this is to ensure or to provide the conditions so that students can be ready to go to college or be ready to seek a career. Question, what is the root cause that some percentage of them, and it differs across districts, are not ready to do either? And then what is a good solution for that? And I think setting numbers like this, I'm not confident at all that it will get those students to where they need to be. And so I think, again, we're looking at underlying assumptions to address an issue. We're looking at kind of a one-size-fits-all approach, and we have lots of different reasons inside that that account for why some kids aren't ready to go to college and why some are not ready to get a job of their choice. Okay. So, again, I guess I wish we could get underneath the assumptions.
When we look at our, I understand exactly what you're saying, but when we look at our history, when we don't have any expectations, what do we get?
Nothing.
No, nothing. You know, we're trying very hard to find that balance. We need to have expectations. They need to, you know, have a level that they need to meet. But it's very difficult, absolutely very difficult, to find the difference between a small rural school and Denver Public Schools or something. I mean, they're hardly even related to each other. I don't think this, I mean, I really appreciate what you said, but I don't think carrying on the discussion much longer carries. Steve's falling asleep over here.
Nope.
Madam Chair, can I just offer two implementation points that it would just be helpful for us to make you aware of? You did have to adopt a menu by May of 2013,
yes.
So this is the standing menu. So without edits to that menu that have been formally adopted, our team will go forward to support districts in achieving the currently adopted menu. Just want to make that clear. And then if you all have a strong opinion about the guidelines versus requirements language, some sort of unified decision on that would be helpful as well. Otherwise, we will, I think, probably communicate in a way that is a bit confusing.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So I move to approve the new menu of career and college-ready determinations for the 2021 Colorado graduation requirements. Otherwise, we're stuck with that, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Second?
No.
Well, is there a second? Jane? Nobody's going to second Angelica's motion.
Well,
dies on the floor. That's great. Isn't that wonderful?
Second and then move forward?
What is your problem?
I will second it just so we can keep talking for a minute.
Right. Excuse me, Jane.
She seconded it.
You did second it?
Yes.
with great glee and gusto.
Absolutely.
And
gusto.
Okay. Call the roll.
No. I have a substitute motion that the board revoke its approval of the original menu of 2013 and that we continue to work on this particular issue into the future.
Now, how does that? Did you say we have a timeline on there?
I'm just deferring to Tony based on the statutory requirements for what that would mean.
You love it.
I almost hesitate to comment at this point in time. There is a statutory requirement that you have the graduation guidelines in place as of 2013. At this point in time, you, of course, in compliance with the statute. If you revoke the prior graduation guidelines and don't replace them, you will not be in compliance with the statute. I guess take that for whatever cautionary principle you want to take it for.
May I ask counsel a question here? Did the statute say adopt?
Yes, I believe it did.
And that happened.
Let me take a look.
So they were adopted. Yeah, looks like we're in compliance.
I have to tell you that I would have a difficult time standing in front of a judge and putting my ethical reputation on the line by making that particular legal argument.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So will you call the roll on the original motion, please?
Yes.
Two motions on the substitute motion.
No. Did you get a second?
I'll second.
I did.
Oh, you didn't have.
God, you guys.
On a substitute.
Can we hear it, please?
We get two? It. We don't do the substitute motion, but thank you,
Tony. I'm sorry. You have a motion that was made and seconded. Then during discussion, you had a substitute motion that was made and seconded. I don't believe that necessarily replaces the first motion.
Thank you.
I think probably what you need to do, don't you, is vote on the first
okay,
motion.
Vote on the first motion. No, if it doesn't
no,
carry.
That's not what Robert's rule says on page 154. A primary amendment to a substitute. Oh,
it's amendment. That's not a substitute.
No, a substitute. I'll find it here. Just a minute. Substitute can be offered for a paragraph or main motion or only one sentence. In case of paragraph, substitute can contain several sentences. A substitute offered for a main motion or resolution for a paragraph or resolution within the primary amendment can therefore be moved only when no other amendment is pending. There was no other amendment pending.
So what you would be doing is voting on the substitute.
If the substitute prevails, then it carries, and that's the motion's adopted. If it fails, we're back to the original motion.
Okay.
I've never heard that. Busy?
Okay.
We're voting guaranteed. On the substitute motion.
Yes.
To rescind what we have. Yeah. And to have no graduation requirements.
Suspend it and don't have any graduation requirements. That's just what we need, right?
Yes. To revoke the menu of 2013 that was adopted in 2013 and continue working on graduation guidelines.
I'll withdraw the motion if the second will be withdrawn, and then maybe we can discuss some other possibilities.
I agree. I'll agree to that.
Yes. Thank you. I don't like getting lobbied by rural districts who tell me they can't comply. I take what they tell me in good faith and I believe it. I appreciate for a change being able to actually hear a position contrary to that which staff takes, and I think that's refreshing that we had Paula here for that purpose. But until we resolve the issue of whether or not in fact rural districts can comply with this, then I'm a no vote on this, and I would hope that staff, if in fact this motion fails, staff would come back with something that works for rural Colorado. And I think staff should agree that they're going to work aggressively to come up with something that rural Colorado can support. So, presuming that we'll get that kind of cooperation, I'll withdraw the motion, but I will vote no on the main motion.
Call the roll on the main motion.
On the main motion? Okay. Steve Durham.
No.
Dr. Flores.
No.
Jane Goff.
Jesus.
Jane?
On the original motion.
Oh, I thought maybe you didn't hear it.
No.
Pam Masnack?
No.
Marcia Neal?
Yes.
Dr. Scheffel?
No.
Dr. Schroeder?
Yes.
Having been here for 6 years and having never spent a more miserable 2 days in my life than I have the last 2 days, our board doesn't usually operate this way, and I feel really badly about it. And I think that perhaps, Mr. Durham, I know you realize you're very, you seem to blame this on staff. The staff is doing all these things that they shouldn't do, and gee, if the staff did it right, we'd be just fine. Staff is doing what they are legally bound to do. So and obviously you want to take that apart, and you're like 6 years worth of work that you want to take apart, and therefore, it may take you a year or two to take it apart. You can't take it all apart in a couple of weeks. So I think we'll just suspend this discussion and thank you very much.
You.
And we won't take any action at all, and we'll deal with it later, because I think we're reaching a breaking point here. So thank you very much, and we'll move on.
May I comment, Madam Chair?
No.
Well, from that subject, we will move on to a much more pleasant subject. Don't go clear away. This is a good part.
No.
Yes, stay here. Okay.
This is up to the search. I dismissed my staff.
No, but
before we do that,
I want to remind you all that, as you know, Carrie Markle has taken an exciting job opportunity, and tomorrow is her last day at CDE. Congratulations, Carrie. We're sad to see her leave, but very excited for what lies ahead of her. She will be greatly missed by both the State Board of Education members and CDE staff, as she has left and truly left a meaningful imprint on all of us. Carrie has served the Colorado Department of Education since October 2011 as our State Board Relations Director and Policy Analyst. She then took on an additional role as Data Privacy Officer last year. Since her time in this additional role, she has been noted as one of the top state educational agency privacy experts in the country, and is the only certified information privacy officer in a state education agency. I didn't know that, Carrie. For almost 4 years, Carrie has worked as a liaison with State Board of Education members and staff to ensure board member requests are met and that board meetings run smoothly. She has been a vital voice and a perspective to CDE's executive team and provided counsel across the organization to ensure CDE is doing its job to meet the requirements of law and rule. Please join me in thanking Carrie for her outstanding service and congratulating her on her next endeavor.
Well, you guys took me, you know, I planned things out and I like to know what's going to be next, and Busy would not tell me what was coming. I just kind of picked up that something might be coming, and I had just to deal with it. So you saw, see what happens when things happen, surprise, surprise. But it's been my honor to serve you all, to serve the previous boards.
And you will be greatly missed.
And I wish you all the very best.
Thank you, Carrie.
All right. Ms. Birdsall, would you read us into executive session, please?
Absolutely. An executive session has been noticed for today's State Board meeting in conformance with 246-4023B CRS concerning an employee of the State Board of Education who requested that the matter be addressed in executive session pursuant to 246-4023BI CRS. One CRS. I.
Okay. Executive session. Any opposed? Motion passes. The board will convene an executive session and the public is excused.